Hello and welcome to this episode of Oral History at Shippensburg University. This episode will be dedicated to our topic, Call to Action in Carlisle Advocacy and Accessibility, and we are your hosts.
Julie.
Martha.
Jonathan.
And Mackenzie. As our title notes, the purpose of our podcast is to bring awareness of the ability of individuals to come together in the face of the COVID-19 pandemic, as this podcast is just one of many created from the Oral History Project started by Dr. John Bloom in 2021. The project aims to understand how this challenging time has changed people in the long term within the Cumberland Valley of Pennsylvania. The 2022 Oral History Podcasts aimed to better understand how specific people and professionals reacted to and dealt with COVID-19 and the related social unrest. In this specific podcast, four graduate students interviewed individuals from different professions, such as the current Carlisle Borough Council members, the director of Hope Station, and a gifted education teacher. Each person experienced a call to action that allowed them to come together in their community, and with that, let's get this podcast started.
Hi, I'm Julie, and I interviewed Brenda Landis. She's a longtime resident of Carlisle, where she serves as the deputy mayor of Carlisle Borough and the chair of Employee Relations and Citizen Participation Committee, as well as the co-chair of the Sustainability and Community Planning Committee. Besides being on the council, she works full-time as a multimedia specialist at Dickinson College, and as the pandemic began, we all had some sort of interaction with Zoom or other video calling formats, so being a multimedia specialist allowed her to smoothly adapt to a remote workplace. Brenda's call to action uniquely comes before the pandemic, as she became an advocate for renewal efforts for a park located in a low-income neighborhood. Life, like many of us know, is just busy. Busy with school, work, social lives, and everything in between makes it hard for people, and in this case, the community members, to attend meetings as they are usually held weekly at night. She fulfilled this need by blocking those meetings, which allowed people to gain important information that would overall aid them in reaching their ultimate goal. It wouldn't be until April 2020 that the borough would incorporate Zoom to hold and record their meetings, as lockdown restrictions were still in place. The council would also stream their meetings live on YouTube, where they would reach 30 to over 100 viewers at a single meeting. Touching on another subject besides the reliance on Zoom, Brenda talked about how the council acted as a supporter for many community organizations. There are many active organizations within Carlisle that make up the Carlisle Action Network, and specifically Brenda mentions one instance of the work between the council and the community.
One other good example. So we have Community Cares. It's our homeless shelter, but in Carlisle, we don't have a homeless shelter. It's like a rotating shelter at a church for a whole month at night. So like basically people come in at 8 p.m. They have a place to sleep, but they have to leave at like 8 a.m. or 7 a.m. or something like that. And there is a building for Community Cares that some like families can spend time at, but it's not very big. So when the pandemic came, like these churches were like, well, we can't just send our volunteers. A lot of their volunteers are elderly and, you know, COVID, you know, so many different concerns. So our community center wasn't being used because all of our recreation was shut down. So within like just a couple weeks, we essentially built a homeless shelter in our community center. And so it was up and running for 3 or 4 months until we were able to, some of the mandates were lifted and we were able to have some recreation again. And then we supported CARES in trying to figure out how to, ensure that they still have a place for their folks. And beyond that, like we're still in great contact with Beth, who coordinates all of that. And there's a good chance that we're going to finally have like a proper homeless shelter in Carlisle. We had to look at zoning, right? So there's lots of like, it started with here, like an immediate emergency situation. We need people to be safe and healthy and have a place. And then after you get through like, you know, the worst of the beginning of the pandemic, then you can start strategizing like, well, what does long-term needs look like in this, you know, area, and how can we continue to work to make that the best that it can be?
And when we look at the bigger scheme of things, Brenda's story is just one of many who used their grassroots background to help advocate for communities who couldn't, and learned herself that it's okay to take a moment and reflect on all that's been accomplished.
The COVID-19 pandemic certainly brought on social justice and civil rights concerns that the community of Carlisle had to face. I'm Martha, and I interviewed Sophronia Perry, elected to the Carlisle Borough Council in January of 2022. She had been an advocate for the African American community in Carlisle for several years, working as the director of Hope Station, which provides services to low-income families, and also on the board of PA Humanities and Leadership Cumberland. At the start of the pandemic during lockdown, Sophronia organized help for lower-resource families in Carlisle to attain important supplies, including face masks. After the deaths of Ahmed Aubrey, Breonna Taylor, and George Floyd from February to May of 2020, Sophronia had a call to action to do more for the community, especially African Americans who called Carlisle their home, leading her to become more active in civil rights and social rights movements, including Black Lives Matter protests. Sophronia not only advocates for civil liberties, but is especially interested in enabling Black entrepreneurs to succeed.
I felt like I needed to do more. I mean, I was doing a lot, but it just felt like I needed to do more. And I needed for it to be more pointed things. So it's, what more can I do for my community, for the Black community to help? And one of those things was, you know, getting more involved in the political arena. Now, I didn't imagine that I would personally be like joining a council. I initially thought or planned that I would help others that wanted to run for council. And how do we help you run? And, you know, talking about the importance of voting and that we all need to be involved in that was one of those things that I thought, okay, this is what I'll do. But then as I started thinking about it, and also doing work with Black entrepreneurs, you know, really showing that support, realizing that we really needed to see more of that and more support. So my reason for running was them, because I wanted for the borough to be more invested in, you know, Black entrepreneurs in the Black community. So, you know, I eventually said, okay, this is what I'm running on, and this is what I would like to see happen. And so, yeah, I made the decision then to run. So it was mainly, I guess the biggest thing I could say is the summer of 2020, when George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery were killed. At that point, I'd had my fill, and I was up to here, and it was, okay, now you got to do something. And this was one of the things I decided to do.
So you mentioned certain objectives you had in wanting to be on the Carlisle Borough Council. What were those objectives?
So I wanted for the borough to be more invested in the Black community, period. So, you know, there are entrepreneurs who did not, you know, they're up and coming, they're trying to get their business going. They didn't know much about the Chamber of Commerce and what that was about, because nobody had really taken the time to talk to them and make them feel like they were actually a part of the community. So I wanted to find a way to bring the two together. And so in talking with the entrepreneurs and saying, hey, you know, what would you like for the borough to do to help you? You know, so bridging that gap so that now we had to do strategic, or not strategic planning yet, but we had to do we had to set goals for the year. And one of my goals was, you know, the Black entrepreneurs. So I literally had a meeting with them and I said, okay, what would you like? What do you need from the borough? And they gave me ideas. You know, we wanted mentorships to happen. They wanted space so that they could, do their, you know, do their work, have a space where, you know, one of them does skincare, one of them does popcorn. Well, we need space in order for us to, you know, to create these things. So let's do some space. And how about some advertising and, you know, doing things like, let's do some networking events, you know. So, you know, we talked about that.
This endeavor became her most prominent call to action, leading her to found the Black Economic Growth Alliance in May of 2021 to advance Black entrepreneurs in Carlisle and the larger central Pennsylvania area, drawing on her connection to the borough council. On another note, Sophronia also contributed to recognizing the concerns of minorities and involving them in the community through the borough council.
I had already said that it was important that you know, people in not just the Black community, but in all the communities of color in Carlisle, that they know who their council members were, that they know who their mayor is. And a lot of them don't know. Like, they can pass them in the street and they will not know who they are at all, because they don't go to the borough meetings. But a lot of that is because they've not been made to feel like they could go to them. And I'm not talking about the current council members that I have. It's just the way it's been. So wanting to kind of to bridge that gap. So, you know, having town hall meetings, having meetings where, you know, we move our council meetings around. So it doesn't have to always be in the in borough hall. Let's move it around. Let's move it a little bit closer. Let's let people know, you know, if there is something that is happening in the community and you are opposed to it, or if there's something you would like us to see, you are welcome to come to a council meeting and you can speak at the council meetings. A lot of them don't know that they're allowed to come and speak at the council meetings. So bringing it a little bit closer so they feel a little bit more comfortable. I know people are like, well, you know, Borough Hall isn't that far from, you know, the Hope Station neighborhood. It really isn't. But it used to be the police station. So there are people that don't want to go there because that's been the police station. I don't want to go in the police station. And then there are people who have moved into Carlisle and have never been over there because they didn't need to. You know, while they have to pay their water bill, it's a bill. So literally all they would have to do is just write a check and send it, put it in the mail. They don't have to go over there for that. So making it where there's more focus on, you know, the low-income community. So it's not just, well, we're here and there's only a particular group of people that will come to us. Let's go to them. Let's see what their needs are. And letting people know who they are so that it's not just election time when, you know, we're out and people see us and, oh, okay, yeah, we want you to vote for us. But no, they know who you are. They know that if they have a problem, they can come to you. They can call you. They feel more comfortable with you. So when election time comes, yeah, okay, so I know who this person is. I'm going to vote for this person because this person hears me whenever I speak. You know, if I need to talk to them about something, they're there to listen to me, to talk to me, to help me with something that I'm in need of. So kind of bridging a gap that hasn't been bridged before.
There is no doubt that Sophronia Perry has been a champion to the community of Carlisle, and her call to action to serve on the Carlisle Borough Council has allowed this little community in Cumberland County, Pennsylvania, to shine that much brighter through such trying times.
Hi, I'm Jonathan, and I interviewed Sean Cramsey, who has been a member of the Carlisle Borough Council since 2016. In particular, we discussed three ways that he and the other members of the Borough Council were called to action to respond to the pandemic in 2020. The first of these was the decision to allow the borough manager, Jeff Snyder, to make decisions in place of the council. While allowing an unelected official to act in place of the elected council was unorthodox, the council members felt that this would make responding to developments in the pandemic more feasible on a day-to-day basis.
What that did was help in real time our borough staff, our borough manager, along with our fire chief at the time, who was our who was in charge of kind of our emergency response to the pandemic. It allowed them to interact in meetings and make decisions in real time that didn't require council approval. Because as council, we meet, we have a workshop once a month and a meeting. But when you're dealing with a pandemic, you can't say, oh, well, let's make this decision next month, right? There are things that are moving kind of quickly.
This decision allowed the borough council to act in response to the pandemic without interruption. The second action the council took to mitigate the effects of the pandemic was a change to parking meter practices that allowed some local businesses to continue their operations with less interruption. In this way, the borough helped to normalize conditions for their local businesses and allow them to continue their operations. Finally, the most long-lasting change made during the pandemic was the switch to remote council meetings over Zoom. What initially could have been a hindrance to access turned into a way to involve the community more in the work of the council.
I think that gave residents just another avenue, especially, you know, based on our meetings, if people are busy during the day or couldn't make it physically to Borough Hall, they now had two options to view our meetings. I will say I'm happy that we've kept that practice, even as our meetings have shifted back in person. Residents can still hop on a Zoom and ask questions that way, or they can follow along on Facebook and comment on what's going on. And we, as borough council, kind of go back, and if folks didn't bring things up during the meeting, we can still see what they were saying and if there's any issues that were brought up. So I think you know, that's one of the lessons that we learned, and I think we adapted to fairly quickly because we had to. But moving forward, I think it's just a benefit for our residents that they can have a more convenient way to watch and interact with our meetings.
While at this point they have returned to in-person meetings, the Borough Council still streams their meetings to allow the community to stay informed and involved. Through all their work during the pandemic, the Borough Council strove for unity and understanding as they worked to keep the community safe and functional.
Yeah, so I will say again, I think we were lucky in our borough that our council was pretty unified in almost every decision. Now, you know, there might have been a decision or two where people had asked questions or said, you know, is this the best route or is that the best route? But it never got contentious. And I will say, you know, most of the votes we take in general, even outside the pandemic, are unanimous. And that feeling kind of carried through definitely early on and continued, I think, to be pretty unanimous between our group. I will say we were, if you look at federal or even state politics in Harrisburg, we were a bit different. You could see kind of those trends as the pandemic went. As we got further into the pandemic, things may have become political, right? Or you may have seen some of that fighting as not even political, but hey, I think we should do this. And other folks who have votes say, hey, this isn't the best way to do this. You know, we're trying, and the people were trying to navigate what is the science as it changes, right? We're all kind of learning on the fly.
As Sean and I talked, I noticed that he almost universally referred to the actions of the council rather than his own efforts, further underlining the harmony of the borough leadership. While unity was certainly not unique to this borough council during the pandemic, it was still a significant feature of their work to support the community.
I'm Mackenzie, and I interviewed Matt Fonstock, who is a teacher of the gifted at Carlisle High School and has been working for the district for 20 years. Along with this, he was in charge of many extracurricular activities, which include student council, an improv comedy troupe called Wingin' It, Poetry Out Loud, Young Adult Writers and Poets, Quiz Bowl, and Academic Decathlon. Obviously, when the COVID pandemic hit and schools closed, these activities would not continue, or at least not in their traditional sense. But before we get into that, let me first explain how the COVID pandemic affected schools here in Pennsylvania. On Friday, March 13th, 2020, Pennsylvania State Governor Tom Wolf made a statement that would put the state in a shutdown and all Pennsylvania schools would have to close starting on Monday, March 16th. However, the schools did not have to cancel events for that following Saturday and Sunday. Schools across Pennsylvania were expected to make these calls for themselves. Some events, such as sports, had easy decisions. They were not important in the grand scheme of things and would be canceled with little to no repercussions. But what about events like the SATs? Now we know that many colleges removed their requirements for standardized testing because of the pandemic, but at this point, that was not certain. Carlisle High School was one of the schools that had an SAT exam scheduled for Saturday, March 14th. They had a tough decision to make, however, they decided to go on with the test, but that was not the case for 50 other schools in Pennsylvania. No one knew much about COVID at this point, and by this time, on March 13th, only 41 people had tested positive across Pennsylvania, and only 3 cases were in Cumberland County. But nevertheless, on March 16th, Governor Wolf extended the state shutdown, and schools across Pennsylvania were closed indefinitely. Teachers and faculty knew that this would not be good for their students. There was a wide range of efforts across Carlisle School District to assist its students, with the first being a food pickup plan for kids in need. Students were able to order breakfast and lunch during the first week of their original 2-week closure. These pickups also included personal belongings that the students had left prior to the closure. Once the shutdown was extended, the Carlisle School District continued its food pickup initiative, and students were provided with 5 breakfasts and 5 lunches, which were made up of sandwiches and non-perishable food items. Teachers were jumping into these efforts, and some made videos about their lives at home. Some used their pets, while others used their videos to keep their kids engaged in their classes. Fonstock has described his position as being untraditional for a teacher. He does not have a set class that he teaches, but rather he invites his students into his classroom during study halls and lunches to do various enrichment activities and games. These activities would typically include trivia sessions, watching TED Talks, talking about current events, or as I already have mentioned, playing a game. He ultimately wanted to give his students an outlet to interact with their classmates while both having fun and learning.
As I was talking with him about how Carlisle School District handled the COVID pandemic and the shutdown, he had said that in February of 2020, he was telling his colleagues that we would be shutting down due to COVID, and because of this, he started to get things ready for remote learning. After Governor Wolf issued the two-week closure, Fahnestock knew that it was going to last much longer, so he started to ask his students if they would be interested in creating a book club. But rather than me explain how this worked, I'll let him tell you.
And one of the things that I did before the world shut down, when I was still, like, I still had students in the room, I said to them, I was like, look, we are going to close. And like, it's not official. I don't know anything, but like, this is coming for us. And I said, I want to start a book club. So I had researched some apocalyptic books, and I had found, this novel from like 2014, I think it came out, Station 11. I don't know if you've heard of, like, HBO made a miniseries of it. But I had researched that book and I ordered 20 copies of it. And I said to my students, if any of you want to read this book during like the school closure that I know is coming, let me know. And it's funny, the books arrived, I think, the first day that we were actually closed. So I was prepared for that. And I had a bunch of kids who wanted to read this book that I hadn't read myself. I sort of did it with them. And I remember, like, in retrospect, I was so nervous about, like, how am I going to get these books to them and stuff like that. What I did was, when they arrived, I individually bagged each one in a Ziploc, like a gallon-sized Ziploc bag. And I told the kids that they had to wait 2 days before they could pick them up. And I left them on the front porch of my house. And I said, come and pick them up at your convenience. They're individually wrapped. But the kids picked up these books, and we met like every couple days to talk about the next couple chapters of the book on Zoom. And it was really great. Like, it just was a very informal, very authentic feeling opportunity to talk about, like, a novel, just like reading, but also a novel with pandemic implications. And while some people said, you're crazy, this is like a really bad idea to scare them, I actually think all the kids really enjoyed the experience. And it was neat because, and I'm sorry that I'm rambling, I hope this isn't too much for you. It was neat because I when we finished the book, at that point, like, it was very clear that we weren't going to finish the school year. And who knew about, like, you know, everybody's summer plans were canceled and stuff like that. So kids said to me, can we do another book? And we read another book. And then the school year ended. And it was summer, but nobody had anything to do. So we read another book, and we read another book, and we read 7 books over the course of weeks and months, actually. And the group shrunk. And by the end, we were down to just, you know, like 3 people. But that was fine, because for us, it was a lifeline. And it was daily, because by the end we were meeting daily on Zoom to talk about the book and just life. And it's weird. I don't want it to seem creepy or bizarre, but like, it was almost like a little support group of like these kids and I, kids and me. And I think that was just something we all really looked forward to. And we read some cool stuff. I mean, they certainly weren't all pandemic novels. They asked me for like suggestions of books that like I thought they should read, like classic literature.
As we have seen through all of our interviews, COVID and community outreach were not as cut and dry as many believe. It was not only about taking care of students' mental health and safety, but also that of teachers, faculty, and the community as a whole.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Oral History at Shippensburg University with your hosts,
Julie,
Martha,
Jonathan,
and Mackenzie.
As the years go on, the question, where were you at during the pandemic, will always be a conversation starter. So we hope that you enjoyed our conversation on how the global pandemic affected everyday lives, like those of borough council members and a school teacher. We would like to thank our narrators, Brenda Landis, Sophronia Perry, Sean Cramsey, and Matt Fonstock, for allowing us to amplify their stories, and especially to our professor, Dr. John Bloom, who has been helpful throughout the entirety of this project. Make sure to subscribe to Oral History at Shippensburg University to hear more of these stories, all produced by, yes, students. With that, we'll see you next time.